Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our awesome guest is Daniela Furtado, SEO consultant and founder of Findable Digital Marketing, and we're going to talk about SEO versus design. This episode is brought to you by Springboard, a mentor-led online education platform that helps people transition into a career in design. Springboard's UI/UX Design Bootcamp matches you with a design mentor, a career coach, and a student advisor to guide you along the way. The program is 100% online and a great way to build your portfolio. Apply today at springboard.thld.co/UIbreakfast. You can also find the link in the show notes. Hi, Daniela.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And this is such a wonderful topic because we do have SEO experts, but it seems like that and design always go apart. And it's so great to see someone bring those together.
Well, it's something I really enjoy. And so I think they go hand in hand. So I'm happy to talk about it.
Unlike other agencies, your website looks gorgeous. And tell us a bit more what you do for a living, what your agency does, and a bit of your background story.
Yeah, so I am an SEO consultant. SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization. So I help small businesses get more traffic onto their websites, but ultimately make sales from it. So it's all about conversions. It's all about getting traffic that actually leads to something. So I work predominantly with service-based businesses, professional services like architects or designers, lawyers and accountants. But I would say like 20 to 40% of my clients are also SaaS companies. And yeah, so our agency is called Findable Digital Marketing. We're based in Toronto, Canada. And yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
How did you arrive to being an SEO expert? What kind of training did you have originally? Because, you know, given our traditional education system, not many people are born SEO experts.
So I've been online for a while. I'm 26 years old, so I grew up with the internet. I think I got my first computer when I was 9, and I started making websites when I was 12. So websites have always been a big part of my life, but it was always just a hobby. I didn't really think that I could make a living off of it until I was in university. I was part of like the school newspaper, and that's when I first started to learn about SEO. That's when I started to learn about like, okay, we're not just creating content. We also want it to be easy to a marketing role straight out of university. I started working for an agency and I started off in a general position. And I think that's quite common that a lot of us first start off doing general digital marketing roles. And then over time, I specialized. So I've always been really good at analytics and a little bit more on the nerdy or mathematical side, I guess you could say. So that's SEO. And also I was also doing online ads at around the same time. So just it was a natural progression.
Is there anything that you find particularly fascinating and exciting about SEO? Because it's definitely not like an exciting industry by nature. Like, why do you like this job?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's not something I think about often. I like that it's a little bit of a puzzle and a little bit of a mystery. So Google will only tell you so much and the rest you kind of got to figure out on your own from trial and error. So I think I like that it's kind of like a game and you're trying to figure out how to win. And doing it for clients, I think is also really exciting because I get to learn about different industries, different websites. One of my favorite parts of SEO is studying the competitors. So it's all about, you know, if you want to be on the first page of Google, you got to be better than what's already there. So that means that you have to have a very good understanding of who your competitors are and what they're doing on their websites and with their digital marketing strategy. So that's one of my favorite things to do is to study your competitors and figure out like, how can I knock them out of their place? How can I do better? So that sort of that game, I guess you could call it, is what I find the most fun.
That's so awesome to see someone passionate about a subject like this. So let's proceed to our main topic. And let's start by just a few sentences describing what SEO stands for. And what are the key principles of how Google and other search engines rank our content online?
Yeah. So I could talk about this for hours, and there are massive PDFs that explain this. But in a nutshell, SEO stands for search engine optimization. So search engines are obviously Google that everyone knows about, but it could also be Bing, Yahoo, Pinterest is a search engine. There are a lot of platforms that have a search engine built into it. And so Google looks for multiple factors. I guess I would break it up into maybe three pillars. So the first one would be technical. So how accessible is your website? So in SEO, we call this crawlability. So is it easy for Google's crawlers or spiders or robots, or whatever you want to call them, to navigate your website? So the technical aspect is really important. I guess in that, we can also say speed and mobile friendliness is something that Google pays attention to. The next is content. So we have to look at what are people searching for online? What kind of language are they using? And are you using that language in your website? And we call this keywords, which can be misleading because keyword sounds like it's just like one specific word, but it actually can be a phrase. It's the search query. So are you using that language on your website? Are you connecting the dots, right? And is the content that you're providing people really, really informative? Are you, you know, positioning yourself as the expert in a specific topic? So that's the, I would say, the second component, the second pillar. And the third would be, I like to call it like the popularity aspect of it all. So Google pays a lot of attention to links. We call them backlinks in SEO. So are people linking to your website? Are they mentioning you? So Google, if you create a website about, let's say, plants, trees, right? You can write tons of content about trees and plants, and okay, Google will see that you're using these keywords and that you are knowledgeable about this. But it's going to pay a lot more attention to you if other people are mentioning you, because that's an indicator that you are legit, right? Google's saying like, oh, the humans like this website. So this person really knows what they're talking about. And so it pays a lot of attention to links, or it's also can be called citations. So creating a network, being popular online, is also something that Google takes in consideration when they rank. So yeah, I would say those are the three pillars: technical, content, and backlinks.
I should say that none of these say design. Nonetheless, have design. I mean, we do have design as a topic, and clearly that includes the technical aspect, and you can also provide guidelines for the content, right? Mm-hmm. So what are those strategy points that we can introduce as designers, and how can we help site owners plan their websites before mm-hmm. they write content, for example, etc.?
Yeah, so I actually think the design, maybe some people would say that would be the fourth pillar. And I think as Google's algorithm is evolving, and they actually announced that in 2021, they're going to update their algorithm with something called the Google Page Experience, where user experience is going to have a bigger impact. So maybe in the future, we can say that, you know, user experience or design is going to be a fourth pillar. But I like to say, and this is just my personal opinion, there might be other SEO professionals that disagree with me, but design is kind of like what's the string. It connects all of those three pillars together. So when it comes to the technical aspect, like you said, you want a website that is, the information is easy to find because it loads quickly, right? So it's mobile friendly and it's fast. And then from a content point of view, I always say that SEO makes your website easy to find, but UX or design makes your website easy to use. And so if I'm attracting a specific audience through keywords and the content that I'm creating on a website, I want them to stick around, right? Because the information is easy to read. It's designed in a way that it's pleasant on the eyes. So I think design also comes in handy with content. And something I'm learning, this is still new to me, but I'm learning a lot about UX writing and how SEO goes hand in hand with UX writing.
So what comes first, design or SEO? How can we help people plan? Like, are there any actionable steps that we can undertake? And the second part of the question would be probably, how can we prove our authority in the field to be able to recommend those decisions to stakeholders?
Yeah. So I think it kind of depends the stage your website is in. So if you're designing a website from scratch, obviously design is going to be very important, but it helps to have someone on your team that knows quite a bit about SEO. So this could be an SEO consultant, but also just someone on your team that is really interested in it. So at the very early stages, you want to pay a lot of attention to your website architecture. So one tool one exercise I like to do with clients is to literally build a tree graph, like illustrate it. What is your website going to look like from the back end? So I would do that exercise and make sure that your information can be accessed within 3 clicks. So from the homepage, can I access whatever information I want within 3 clicks or less? So that's something I would keep in mind. I would also do keyword research at the very early stages of creating a website and make sure that you're using those keywords throughout your page, of course, and in your images, but also in the links. So that's something I would recommend everyone do when they're first designing a website. And I would also say the same when you are expanding a website. So maybe you're adding a new section, you're introducing a new product or a new service. So keep that in mind as well. Once your website is quite mature and it's in good state, then that's when I would start to look at the overall user satisfaction. I would analyze things like your bounce rates, your dwell time, pogo sticking, all these metrics that definitely intersect like design and SEO.
So the time spent on the web page does affect rankings as well.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So the key parameters we should look for, one thing you mentioned is designing navigation in such a way mm-hmm. that the most important, like the less clicks it takes for the robot to get from your homepage to somewhere else, denotes the significance of the page. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to keywords, that's been the hardest for me always. So, because as a UX person, I know how the clarity of the labels is important. And sometimes that does not play together well with the keywords you want to plan for, because people are searching for one thing and you just want to use different words. So what shall we do in this case?
Yeah, I find that to be the case with a lot of like creative companies. They want to create like a fancy name for their product when there's already maybe simple language that perfectly describes it. And this is something that in the SEO community, we rant about, like in Facebook groups, people are like, So I would say try to find a balance. So I think just to like take a step back, SEO only works when you have something that is searchable. So if you have a product that people have never heard of, I'm not just saying the name of the product, but like how you would describe it. You know, if you're creating a piece of technology that doesn't exist, there's nothing to describe it, there's no language to describe it, then people can't search it, right? So for example, I'm obsessed with bubble tea. I love bubble tea. And whenever I go to a new city, I search bubble tea near me and I can easily find what I'm looking for because I know what bubble tea is. I know what it looks like and I have the language to describe it. But if you have a product where that it's not in the person's vocabulary, then SEO is not going to be of any benefit to you. So the first thing I would say is like, maybe you shouldn't even focus on SEO or keywords, at least right now. Focus on, in terms of marketing, focus on creating a product that and market it in a way that people, you know, understand it to begin with. And then later on, you can look into SEO. So yeah, so first make sure you have something that is searchable. So if you have a product and you want to call it like, I don't know, the software 5000, it's an awful name, but let's say you want to give it this, like this creative name, you know, but you can simply call it like editing software. Like that's what it is, right? It's an editing software, but you want to call it something absolutely, you know, creative and innovative. That's where you have to find a balance. So I would say like in the links and in high up on the page, that's when you should use the actual language. You know, you should call it the writing software, the actual keywords, and then try to sprinkle your actual brand name or your product name, the creative one, throughout the page. It's a matter of finding a balance. I would say, I think this goes with when you're trying to balance SEO and design in general, no matter what it is, don't ignore one. Just figure out what your priorities are. Try to balance the scale as much as possible, but don't ever just push one aside or ignore it altogether.
There is a great episode here in the show that I'd like to link to with Brad Flowers on naming. So there is like a whole universe of advice available on how to name your product. And actually, having keywords did not sound like criteria number one. To be entirely precise, Brad mentioned that there's always a list of criteria how you're going to evaluate the successfulness of your upcoming name. So for some industries, maybe it's super important to become findable. In this case, your advice probably the best. So that's regarding the naming. What should businesses do? Like, I'm a co-founder of UserList and it's about email marketing. And the trouble there is that all people use different words to describe it. So one of our biggest pain points as a business is this trouble to find a single or a couple keywords that specifically denote our product. Instead, it can be called a thousand different things like SaaS, email marketing, email automation, behavior-based email, and I just touched the surface. So what's your advice for finding keywords when the product is established, but there is no obvious win in the keywords area?
Mm-hmm. Would you say that the keywords are drastically different from one another? There's like no similarity?
Maybe just one or two words. I mean, we do it for SaaS. Obviously, SaaS is a common theme. But yeah, everything else is like drastically different.
Then I would say like, don't worry about it too much because Google is smart enough to pick up the differences. It's smart enough nowadays to read context. So that's what I would say in that case, but that's obviously not the case. What some people might do is create a separate page for maybe an exercise that I would do is try to find groups, like try to clump up the words together and try to find ways to organize a page where you're using each clump or each group of keywords. So maybe make it a section, or I would maybe even go as far as creating a separate page. And because it might be that keywords or the language appeals to a specific feature of the product. Could that be the case?
Definitely so. For example, one of the most common advice we received, and we as a company, we do have a friend, Johnny Platt of SEO Scout. So the majority of advice I know did come from him. I highly recommend his resource. And a few key pieces of advice that he recommended for us as a SaaS company was to have more dedicated feature pages. Because you might not like specifically know, but because it's kind of implied for us as SaaS owners, but for other people looking for specific features, that might be very handy.
Exactly.
That exactly matches what you just recommended above. And the other piece of advice that we're in the process of implementing right now is taking the knowledge base for our SaaS product into our primary domain from docs.userlist.com into userlist.com/docs. What's your opinion on that? Does it expand the footprint of the site?
Yeah, for sure. The more content that you provide, the more information that you provide, the better. Absolutely. Especially if it can be of use to others.
So subdomains and domains, what's your take on that?
Oh,
yeah, sure. Let's take on the controversial issues here.
I think it really, really depends. Okay, so again, Google is getting better at connecting the dots between domains and subdomains. But I think it really depends what it is that you want to do. So if you want to create a website in a different language, or you're creating like a sub brand, maybe you have a podcast or an online shop. So it's like, yeah, a sub brand, I guess, is what I would describe it. Then I would definitely use a subdomain. But there are some, it depends. I know this is like the typical answer. It depends. But you kind of have to take it in case by case and look at if it's really needed. But yeah, those are some situations where you definitely want to use a subdomain.
There's some, let's talk a little bit about SaaS websites once we're at it. There are some specific pages that are important for this kind of business. And we can probably talk about feature pages as we discussed, the pricing page, the About Us page. So do you have any recommendations on designing and creating content for those?
Start with keyword research.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's going to make it a lot easier. So start with keyword research. Understand what people are searching for, what language they're using, and the volume. So like how many people are really searching for it, and try to figure out who those people are and what their intent is. So yeah, start with keyword research and then go from there. And then you can start making decisions and designing the page.
Is it better to have shorter pages with less content or longer pages?
Yeah, so this is another big debate. So studies have shown that there's a correlation between high rankings and longer content. So that's not to say that Google prioritizes longer information or longer pages. There's other factors involved. So like if you have more content, then you probably have something that's more people can share, right? So earlier I talked about the importance of backlinks and being popular online. And so if you have content that is really, really good and it's very complete, then there's something for everyone to enjoy and to share with you know, their network. So longer content can create more backlinks. You also have more opportunities to use keywords. So you can, if you just have 200 words on a page, or be a lot more creative and have a variation of keywords or multiple groups, like we were talking about clusters. So there's that aspect. But I think you should always, this is a situation where you got to kind of balance SEO and design or user experiences, that ultimately you need to give people what they're looking for. So if, you know, you can provide the information in 200 words and anything more is just fluff, then I would recommend just keep it short and brief if that's what people are looking for. So think a little bit more about what the user is expecting and give it to them. There are situations where you, like, for example, product pages, especially in e-commerce, where you're going to put the user experience before SEO. So you might have duplicate information, let's say like your return policy. You're going to end up putting that on all of your product pages, all of your feature pages. In SEO, this is not a good practice. You want to avoid having duplicate content. If it's just a little bit, it's just a snippet, it's not that big of a deal. And so that, yeah, that's a situation where, you know what, this is what the user wants. We want to give them all the information they want in one place. We want to have like a one-stop shop of information. So we're going to prioritize this over what Google wants.
I have a number of questions for you to sort of talk about the myths and other little things that we face as website designers. So one of them would be formatting your content. Is it better to have like well-designed blocks, feature grids, and other very structured information? Or another approach would be to have sort of a wall of text, you know, markdown kind of level styling. So, well, not necessarily wall of text. It might have like subheads and pull quotes and everything, but it's still more essay-like. So is there any difference in ranking for an essay slash blog post kind of page versus a typical feature-rich page of a product, let's say?
I don't think, from my knowledge, there's anything about SEO or what Google has put out that says one isn't more important than the other. I think you would just have to study your analytics and see what is more engaging, what gets people to spend more time on your website. So I wouldn't say there's something about SEO specifically that has an opinion about that. That's where designers come in hand.
Another question. Please don't judge me if it's too naive. So there is this like great gradation of H1, H2 headlines of different levels. But does the actual font size matter for SEO?
Huh. I've never thought about that. The only situation where I think that would matter would be for mobile sites. Mm-hmm. So if it's not responsive to the size of the device or the browser, maybe that's a situation. This is kind of maybe a little bit off topic, but with different languages. So it's not necessarily font size, but font files in general. So for example, in China, Mandarin is a very comprehensive language. They have so many.
You speak Mandarin. I saw it on your website. That's such an amazing fact.
Yes. Yeah. So in English, I think we have like, how many letters do we have? 26 letters in our alphabet?
Something along those lines, yeah.
And then you've got accents and numbers. So like we probably, I could be totally wrong, but I'm going to guess like 50 characters, maybe altogether, maybe a little bit more. And in English, but in Mandarin, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of characters. And so font files are massive. And so this can weigh down your website. So this is the only situation where I think fonts can affect your SEO. And because it's going to affect the speed of your website.
Because sometimes another part of this would be trying to trick Google by having something, let's say H1, but putting it in a very tiny, very gray font in your bottom of the page, which is obviously not a good thing to do because Google knows.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear your official opinion on that.
Yeah. No, you said it perfectly. That is not an ethical SEO practice. It's called cloaking, is when you're trying to hide information. So don't do that. Be okay. Transparent.
So this above the fold advice, is it still legitimate or is it kind of out of date? You do still have to place your most important stuff in a very tight manner above the fold, or can you relax and put stuff down the page?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it necessarily has to be above the fold, but definitely in the top. So like we said before, when you're designing your website architecture, the pages that are closer to the homepage, to the higher up top, are of higher priority. So it's the same within the design of your actual website. So whatever content you have higher up is the most important. I wouldn't say that necessarily has to be the above fold. Like if you go to my website on my blog, I think like the featured image takes up the entire first half, but the content below, that whatever keywords I use, I'm trying to rank for those keywords, and those come up in the very beginning of the blog post. So yeah. So yes, it's, I would say pretty much it's true and still relevant.
Should images have captions on them? Should they?
Okay, so they should definitely have alt tags. I always like to rename the file before I upload it. Captions, if it's relevant, why not? And if it's a way for you to use the keywords, absolutely. But I wouldn't say it must always.
Okay, that was one of my questions. Probably the last one would be, in the links, is it important, like, click here to get your worksheets or get the worksheets kind of word into the link itself? What's best? Or is Google smart enough to differentiate, like, to keep them equal?
Yeah, so this is called anchor text. So you want to have a lot of links on your website that makes it easy to crawl as well. So you want to, like we talked about before, you want to make it easy to go from one page to another, not just in the navigation, but within the design of the website. So that's where you want to have links and buttons. And so it's ideal to make sure that your anchor text, the text that you're using for the link, to use a keyword that's relevant to either that page or the page that you're linking to. So yeah, so it's ideal for the anchor text to have the keyword. But I mean, if you have here, like click here as the anchor text, that's also fine. It's nice to have a balance.
Awesome. Let's start wrapping up this episode. But before that, I'd love to hear what favorite resources you have online that people can go to and get themselves up to speed with the best SEO practices that you visit yourself regularly, maybe some books or blogs.
Yeah. So when it comes to books, I honestly don't have any recommendations for SEO, like digital marketing as a whole. Yes. But SEO, I find that by the time a book is published, everything is, not everything, but a lot of it is outdated.
How about digital marketing then? What are your favorites?
So This Is Marketing, obviously, is a good one. Influence by Robert Cialdini is a book that I really like. Scientific Advertising. Ryan Holiday writes good books as well, Growth Hacker Marketing. So these are not, I mean, a lot of marketing nowadays comes down to digital marketing, but it's about marketing principles as a whole and just social psychology or consumer psychology. So any books that are about communication, psychology, and marketing apply to any sort of digital marketing vertical. Yeah, that's when it comes to books. I love reading. I'm a huge, huge reader. When it comes to websites, I always, always recommend that you get your information directly from the source. There are a lot of myths or rumors out there. And even a lot of what I say, you know, things like the captions or the anchor text, a lot of this information isn't directly from Google. They're from studies that SEO professionals have made. So I always try to be careful, like, and say that it depends on the context or there's no like golden rule. And you'll find that when you read information from directly from the sources, you'll see that there are some things are clear and the other pieces are kind of like in the gray area. So I recommend the Google Webmaster blog, number one, and any sort of website from Google. Think with Google is actually really good as well. They've been writing really interesting blog posts about SEO, about what's going on in Google and the current projects that they have going on. And how. What else? Forums are really good. Like Reddit forums are really underrated, but they can be super informative. The conversations that are there, Facebook groups as well. Anything where people are like kind of yelling at each other online, right? You can pick out some really interesting tidbits and opinions.
Great. That was a great answer. Thanks so much. For those who are just starting out with SEO, is there a good way to organize your efforts? Sort of have like an action plan that you can implement starting from some small steps to advancing through the SEO journey, maybe some roadmaps, or like how does even one even approach optimizing their website?
Yeah, I think it's SEMrush. They recently put out like a giant checklist of everything that you should keep in mind. I can send you the link afterwards if you like. And now it's pretty complete. So they break it down to the similar pillars that I mentioned in the beginning. So when it comes to technical SEO, everything that you should keep in mind. When it comes to content or on-page SEO, you know, all the factors that you should, or all the things that you should check off your list. So that checklist is a really good tool to help you kind of see the whole picture and make sure that you're not missing anything when it comes to your website's SEO. So yeah, I would start from there.
Awesome. Thank you so much. When it comes to your company, where can people find it? And you have also a very nice personal blog. So tell us links to both.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so the agency is Findable Digital Marketing, and you can find us on findabledigitalmarketing.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram with the same handle, Findable Digital Marketing. I've been doing Facebook Lives every Wednesday, and I think I'll be doing this for several more months. So I'm mixing it up. So this summer, I'm doing workshops. In the fall, I'm going to do interviews with SEO specialists like Amazon SEO, Etsy SEO, Pinterest SEO, and eventually I'll also do live audits. So yeah, you're welcome to find me on Facebook and join those lives. And yes, I have a blog. I haven't kept it up to date, so I'm surprised that you mentioned it. It's thisisdaniellafurtado.com. And so I write about productivity over there.
Awesome. There is also one article from your Findable blog, which is about writing services pages. And this is a little bit of a tangent to our primary topic, but there is a ton of consultants, freelancers listening to us. So I'd love to link to that as well and send them there, because we all do write service pages for our consulting and design services and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks so much, Daniella, for sharing your wisdom today. And I wish you good luck in growing your company and everything else.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Have a wonderful rest of your week.
Ciao.